Well, Killer Honey, we had a good relationship going, but it's for the birds now, because here come the Colonel.
Woo! Okay, Geraldine, just settle down. There's no time to get passionate. This is a science news program. We've got to get back to work here. So welcome back to the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In just a minute, we're going to get back to today's guest, Matt Feitner, the Regional Vice President of National Accounts for Clean Energy Fuels. Natural gas, of course, is America's second largest energy resource next to coal. And in addition to its abundance, natural gas is a cleaner and cheaper alternative to gasoline and diesel for transportation. And pretty soon, it's going to get a whole lot cheaper to transport our goods across the country because of natural gas, because he's going to make it possible for that to happen, and he's going to tell us all about it. Also, at the end of the program, Matt's going to make a prediction for us for the future. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. And right now, though, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we have here on the set to answer today's query. We got to start by throwing in the coins.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
All right, I see the spirit of the fountain has collected our coins, and he is summoned to give us an answer to our query. Here's one for you, old spirit of the fountain. This will stump you, I have no doubt. What museum gives fans a chance to oogle Jim Morrison's Cub Scout uniform and George Clinton's atomic dog shoes? What museum gives fans a chance to look at Jim Morrison's Cub Scout uniform and George Clinton's atomic dog shoes? What is it?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell me.
Oh, the spirit of the fountain comes up with the right answer again. The museum that gives fans a chance to see Jim Morrison's Cub Scout uniform and George Clinton's atomic dog shoes. If you said the Smithsonian Institution, you're wrong. It's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum.
The barrel of oil has 5.8 million BTUs of energy, okay, and MCF has 1 million BTUs of energy. So it's a very simple exercise. So 3 times 5.8, the equivalent energy to a $100 barrel of oil is $17.40.
Wow.
Now that should just jump out of the radio at the folks that are listening to that and going, holy crap, that is an enormous difference. Our visibility of the future is that gap is only going to increase to the degree that we have a global economic recovery. The demand for oil is going to continue to increase. The supplies are tight. It's incumbent on us as leadership within this country to get ourselves on our own resources. And oh, by the way, it's a lot cheaper and it's a lot cleaner.
So this could be the very thing that is instrumental, largely instrumental, in our balance of payments and our national debt and all the other things that are going on and getting us into a real economic spiral heading up. That's what you're saying?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Other countries get this. They all have plans, but we don't have a plan. So, you know, consider what Iran is doing. So they've got their own oil, as everybody knows. What a lot of people might not know is they have a lot of their own natural gas, too. Well, what they're doing is they've got policies, and they're trying to mandate as much of their transportation fleets in Iran to run on natural gas. And why not? Because they found some idiot that would pay $100 a barrel for it. Okay, so what a shame, shame on us as, leadership in the country for not acting on this sooner. The reason we haven't acted on it, a few years back is we've always been blessed with cheap gas and diesel, and it's very hard to get anything done when you've got, cheap fossil fuels.
Yeah.
But now that picture is changing. Most folks accept that, a barrel of oil is just going to continue to increase. And more companies are taking a look at this, at natural gas, and are jumping on board.
Well, something I have to ask you, and that's because natural gas has gotten kind of a bad rap lately, certainly in the mainstream press, with the fracking and with the water supplies getting contaminated with the chemicals that are used to extract the natural gas. But I'm told that it's rogue companies that are doing this, that when it's really done properly, there isn't any problem. Could you address that?
Yeah, there is no question on the producer side, and I don't care who you talk to. Name the top five producers in the country. They all feel that this has got to be fiercely regulated in terms of a safety standpoint. And, you know, companies like Chesapeake and Anadarko and Apache have done, the ones that are doing, you know, 95% of the exploration are protecting those groundwater supplies. The fear of fracking and a lot of the buzz on and then some of the media about it, it's something that they think is new, and a lot of the, I'll call, perceived outrage is up in the Northeast where it really is new to, you know, folks in Pennsylvania and New York. But we've been fracking in this country for a heck of a long time. There's nothing really magical or daring about it. You know, the protection that you need to do is you're drilling a hole, and you need to have a casing that eliminates the possibility for anything to get into the groundwater supply. So, you know, we're drilling for natural gas that's, you know, a mile down. The water aquifers that we're concerned about are only, you know, a 1,000 feet or 800 feet down in most cases. These companies are very, very good at making sure that those groundwater supplies aren't impacted, and there really has not been a single documented case where groundwater supply has been impacted due to fracking. There have been some isolated incidents where private water wells have run into natural gas pockets, and you know, famously on that HBO program, that was one of the ones that was highlighted. It was somebody who was actually able to light their water on fire. I don't know if you've seen that, but that specific incident was not due to fracking. It was due to a private well that hit a pocket of natural gas. So the folks that are afraid of this and scared of this are done a pretty good job of trying to incite some fear on an irrational basis when it really doesn't have much empirical backing.
Well, of course, you know the old saying: "No news is good news," and reporters like to look for things that are sensationalistic and bad news. So that's why I'm glad you touched on this. But I have to ask you then a little further: the report out of Ohio recently that this gas extraction caused an earthquake. Any credence to that?
No, that's absolutely insane. The I was speaking to a geologist at a local university in the town where I reside, and we were talking about, you know, whether or not that could, you know, impact anything. I mean, you're talking about earthquakes as, you know, the releasing of tension between two tectonic plates, right? And it was you know, akin to, you know, a drop in an ocean in terms of the impact of a frack job would be in terms of how could it do anything to a fault line. It is absolutely, I was told, preposterous to conclude that a frack job could help release the tension between two tectonic plates and cause an earthquake.
Okay, you're getting the word out about this, I guess, kind of in increments. I understand you're going to be speaking at the 4th Annual IEEE Green Technologies Conference going on in Tulsa the 19th and the 20th of this month. And it's going to be real good to see you there. You're also going to have an exhibit so people can come by and visit you and talk to you and see some things firsthand. And that's really, what else are you doing to get the word out to people to convert their fleets to natural gas and for people like me to consider converting our vehicles to natural gas?
Yeah, but we're doing quite a bit of getting the, you know, activities that are getting the words out. So we're honored to be a part of the event that's going to be held in Oklahoma this year. And my team visits at the ATA, the National Private Truck Council, that has an annual show. There's lots of other shows that are focused on supply chain nationwide that we attend, we speak, we exhibit, trying to get the word out. We also have a growing marketing department that's calling on, you know, private fleets for hire carriers. We're talking to shippers, and we're introducing the concept of bringing natural gas within their fleet, within their supply chain, to drive two things. First of all, to save money. Everybody loves that. The second is to drive sustainability contribution. So that makes everybody feel good. And, you know, for, you know, one of our public customers, you know, we can talk about Coca-Cola has begun looking at natural gas, and you've probably seen some of their press releases. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a good company that is able to demonstrate to its customers that it is taking steps to be more responsible regarding the environment helps their brand be more effective. But the number one reason that anybody comes and talks to Clean Energy about natural gas as a transportation fuel is because they want to save money. And so this is one of the very few green initiatives that really does have a business case where you're going to pay less now, you're going to pay a lot less later, and at the same time greening up your supply chain.
Wow, that's really good. We get to save money, we get to help the American economy, and we get off imported oils. It seems like we've kind of covered the waterfront there. That's great. Now, what have we missed? What have I forgot to ask you? What do we need to talk about to really drive the point home?
Well, I think we've touched on all of the points, but I mean, listening to me talk, you might think, geez, this is easy. How come we're not further along? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the short-term hurdles, right? So when we're talking with a fleet, there's a couple of them. Right now, there are really kind of only two engine choices, and in less than a year's time, we're going to have a third choice. And then, you know, we understand there's lots more money going into R&D where we've got OEMs that are racing to bring natural gas products to market so that there'll be just a ton of choices. And that's the day that we kind of look forward to. So one of the challenges we run into, Colonel, to be frank, is with just those two engine choices, it doesn't fit everybody's needs. Okay, and so we've got to be selective. We've got to pinpoint in terms of where we put these tractors. That's kind of one opportunity. The second opportunity is since these vehicles aren't made in any large scale yet, the incremental cost to them is a little bit higher than their diesel counterparts. As more and more of these tractors are manufactured, naturally that price, incremental price, comes down. The business case looks even better. So I'd tell you we have some short-term opportunities, you know, that were just covered. Long-term, as this gets more prevalent, more widespread, more accepted, you're going to see an explosion in trucking in terms of natural gas. The OEMs see it coming, too. They are all preparing to have 10, 15, 20% of their production to be natural gas tractors. These are big, big numbers.
Well, yeah, and when this happens, there's going to be a lot of, a lot of demand for people like me to go ahead and convert my 15-mile-per-gallon Jeep Cherokee to natural gas. And I'd probably be able to do it with the existing motor because the spark plugs and everything are there, but I'd have to change the fuel storage system, I suppose, in the pump.
Yeah, you'd have to go to a qualified outfitter that could convert your vehicle. There are some rules. Generally, a flex fuel vehicle that has had components in it that are hardened are better examples of vehicles to convert to natural gas than others. Natural gas is a drier fuel. It doesn't have a lubricative quality to it. Mm-hmm. So having a flex fuel vehicle that already has a lot of the components hardened in it make it a better candidate for a natural gas vehicle. But in terms of you know, addressing the public, the real killer product that would help everybody make this even a stronger case is having a home fueling appliance. So if you had natural gas coming to your home today, you could attach a home fueling appliance in your garage, which is essentially a low-pressure compressor. You'd hook up your vehicle as it sits in the garage overnight. It would take the natural gas supply from your existing home and compress the fuel slowly over an eight-hour period while you slept, and in the morning you'd have a full tank of gas and you'd be able to go wherever you needed to go, and you wouldn't ever have to bother with fueling. That is probably the way the public will be able to participate in natural gas vehicles in the future.
But right now that system doesn't exist, although gas to the homes exists, but that sort of refueling system isn't in operation, is that right?
Well, there is one, but it's an expensive unit. It's difficult to for an individual to justify the cost of it and the payback. We anticipate that there will be more than one provider that'll make these fueling appliances, and the cost is going to come down dramatically. I mean, there's nothing magical about it. It is just basically a small compressor. So you think about you walk into a home improvement store and pick up a pressure washer, you know, you're probably going to spend $300, $400. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of price point that will make this really attractive for the going public. And we're not there yet. We don't have a product out there that's in that price range.
So I've got a future to look forward to that I can convert to natural gas, but I'm going to probably have to bide my time a little bit. That's the point, I suppose.
That's right. That's the point. Or if you're lucky enough to live in an area that has sufficient public infrastructure, like where I live, I just fuel at the public stations in and around town. So I'm based in the Dallas area, and we've got about 14 stations across the Metroplex, and I'm able to fuel my daily driver, you know, my pickup truck, just at our public fueling stations, just like I would if I owned a gasoline truck.
So I could do that too, because I'm in the Dallas area also. But if I get on the road, that's when I have a problem. That's when I have a worry. Is that right?
Well, you know, it does. You know, if you're going to drive out into West Texas, for example, so if you wanted to drive to El Paso in your compressed natural gas Jeep, you might have some trouble. But there are good websites like CNGNow.com, okay, and you can pull up a national map of where the public infrastructure, that, not just ours, not just my company, but others that also have stations open, and you'd be able to determine what trips you could make in your vehicle and where you'd be able to fuel. So it can be done.
Well, Matt, what kind of range do you get in your pickup truck with, let's say, one complete fueling?
Yeah, the mileage on my truck is the same as its gasoline counterpart, but the range on my truck is well over 400 miles on the highway.
Wow, and then the actual cost of fill-up compared to the cost of, let's say, gasoline fill-up?
Well, I'm saving almost a dollar a gallon at our site. So, you know, if I'm getting an 18, a 20 gallon fill, I'm saving nearly $20 every time I fuel up, and I fuel up, you know, every week. It does add up. It's interesting, you know, you talk to these truckers. Recently I was at the Port of Long Beach, where we operate the world's largest natural gas fueling station. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of tapped the shoulder of an owner-operator, right, that was driving a natural gas tractor, and I was asking him how he liked his truck and how long he had it and all that stuff, and he had lots of nice things to say. And I asked him, I said, are you saving anything? And he just looked at me and got a big smile, and he says, sir, he goes, I'm putting $400 a month into my pocket where I wasn't before. He's saving that much money on fuel. Now, in California, you know, the diesel is well over $4. We're selling LNG at that port station for $2.50. So he's saving quite a bit of money.
So for any individual then that does a lot of driving, there's really very compelling reasons to switch to natural gas and get a pretty quick payback. That's what it sounds like.
Yes, it is. It is a typical business case for a natural gas tractor. You know, if it's a high mileage tractor, and we're talking about 90,000 miles and up, the payback typically is 2 years or less without any incentives, without any help in terms of grants or, and not that they exist, federal incentives to go natural gas versus diesel.
I understand, too, that the engines last longer with natural gas than they do with either diesel or gasoline. Is that true, too?
Well, you know, I have a difficult time. I intuitively, I can make an argument that one of these natural gas tractor engines will last longer than its diesel counterpart. Empirically, I'd have a difficult time illustrating that, and I'll tell you why. So the natural gas the engines in tractors have only been in existence for a few years, 3-4 years. So we don't have enough of them that have gone their entire life cycle so that I could have some data to show you. But yes, you know, natural gas is a much simpler hydrocarbon. The natural gas tractors, compared to their 2010 counterparts, are much simpler vehicles. You probably know that on a 2010 tractor, you've got to run urea, you know, a separate fuel that helps knock down the emissions on how dirty diesel is. You also have to run a particulate filter. These are complex systems that cost money to operate. Neither of those systems are required on a dedicated natural gas tractor. So we think that over time, with maturity, with some data, that it's going to show that not only do natural gas engines are they at least as durable as their diesel counterparts, but they'll be cheaper to maintain.
All right. Well, do you want to put on the meditation cap for a minute and tell us a prediction for the future?
Prediction for the future.
All right. Since you're ready, we've entered our meditation chamber where we can see the future. What do you see?
Our prediction for the future is we see increased pressure on oil. So you consider, you know, we as Americans, we consume about 22, 23 barrels of oil each a day. You know, the good folks in India and China, their per capita consumption is about 3. So think about those developing economies and those types of folks and their demand on energy. You've got oil production that's basically capped. We basically, as a war on this planet, can only produce about 88 million barrels a day, give or take. Our demand is going to have dire consequences to the price of that oil in the global market. You're going to see natural gas prices continue to stay low in the United States because of the enormous supply picture, and fleets that take advantage of that difference are going to reap the rewards and give themselves a competitive advantage.
All right, Matt Feitner, the Regional Vice President of National Accounts for Clean Energy Fuels Company, going to be a speaker at the IEEE 4th Annual Green Technologies Conference in Tulsa, Oklahoma, on the 19th and the 20th of April. We're looking forward to seeing you there. And you're going to have an exhibit there. We can go by and shake your hand. And actually, I understand Mike Sullivan, your buddy Mike Sullivan, is going to be actually running that particular booth. And we'll get to meet him and get a good demonstration of what's going on with clean energy fuels.
Colonel, we're looking forward to the event.
And now, we make time for the Voice of Reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
People do get funded. And the main word of wisdom that I want to share with people who fit this category is that don't get too upset if you get rejection. Because with the rejection, you will get a bunch of reviews and the summary of your proposal as seen by the reviewers. And that will help you revise and rewrite and create a new proposal that you submit. And a lot of times, after a few trials, people do get funded. Pamida Chowdhury, National Science Foundation.
So you decide, has this really been the Voice of Reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.